Welcome to Psych Talk. I am your host, Jessica Lee, a licensed clinical psychologist. It is my mission to motivate, inspire, and educate you on everything psychology, mental health, and self-growth. Although topics discussed on this podcast are similar to therapy, Psych Talk is not a replacement for therapy and is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Whether you are a mental health professional or student in the social science field, are interested in psychology and mindset shifts, or are just interested in gaining skills and knowledge to grow into the best version of yourself, this podcast is for you. My hope is to provide you with knowledge and skills that you can implement in your daily life that add up to make a big impact. Let's dive into today's episode. Hey everyone, welcome back to Psych Talk, and thank you so much for joining me for today's episode. Today, I have a very special guest with me, Dr. Laura Glazebrook, who is a physical therapist. And as I was telling Laura before we hit record, I'm pretty sure you're the first physical therapist I've had on Psych Talk. So thank you so much for being here today.
I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So can you introduce yourself a little bit about your background and what you do?
Absolutely. So I am a physical therapist. I got my doctorate in physical therapy in 2012. So almost 12 years ago. It has been a long road, but my journey actually started back when I was 11. I was diagnosed with scoliosis, and it turns out that I needed to get a spinal fusion at a pretty young age. And so part of the process is once you have a spinal fusion, you actually need to have a physical therapist kind of get you up out of bed and get you up and walking. And so I was, you know, even at that age, I was like, this is a pretty cool job. Like, this would be fun. So I started thinking about PT even when I was really young. Although there was some time in undergrad where I strongly considered psychology, but I kept coming back to physical therapy. But despite the scoliosis and the spinal fusion, I was really active as a kid. I did a lot of dance and some musical theater. I was a certified group exercise instructor in PT school. I'm still relatively active. I'm a runner, a triathlete. I lift weights. I currently practice in a PT clinic that focuses primarily on scoliosis and spinal fusion, mostly scoliosis exercise. There's like a subspecialty within PT. And I also do pelvic health. So I also have a website. So I'm working on some virtual stuff. So, you know, I'm just kind of all over the place, but I love it. I love every minute of it.
That's awesome. And thank you so much for sharing part of your journey, because that's one thing I was going to ask you about, because I know you specialize in scoliosis and pelvic health. I'm still going to ask you anyway, even though at least for the scoliosis part, I can infer. But I love hearing people's stories and journeys. And even though you didn't, you know, major in psychology, I work with PTs quite frequently. So I feel like, you know, that's fine. I'll let that one slide. No, I'm just kidding. What I was going to ask is how you came to specialize in scoliosis and pelvic health. So you shared a little bit about your scoliosis journey. Was that why, or
yes.
I don't know, share whatever you want.
That was a very large part. Although I have to admit, I did not realize that I didn't realize there was a type of PT specifically for scoliosis until more recently. I think I probably would have gotten into that sooner, but I didn't really know that it was an option for me. So my personal experience really guided me to where I am. So in my journey, I had, like I mentioned, that spinal fusion at 11, and I missed 6 weeks of school because of that fusion. But then even today, like once you can have that type of a surgery, so spinal fusion, basically they fuse several like levels of your spine with hardware. Mm-hmm. So I have like half of my spine is fused. It's pretty common for a lot of kids that have scoliosis. I think the aftercare left me a lot to be desired. So the orthopedist, basically, you know, you have this major surgery, they teach you how to walk again, you have this little back brace, and then after they, after your follow-ups, they clear you and they're like, all right, so avoid roller coasters and like gymnastics where you do multiple jumps and like have fun and you don't really get any other so like any other info on
What to
scoliosis or what
do?
you should and shouldn't do. So it's fine. But like I said, it sort of was the start of my journey and interest in PT. But even in PT school, I mean, it's PT probably similar to how it is for a psych program. It's a generalist program, and so you learn little bits of everything, which that's just how it has to be, right? So for PT school, I really learned the bare minimum about scoliosis. I think we had like a maybe 2 hour lecture on it, and
Oh,
similar with
wow.
pelvic health. The thing that I was that it for my particular school, my particular program, I was actually really lucky because I had some professors that specialized in pelvic health. And so for my research project in PT school, I did a pelvic floor, basically a research project looking at how the pelvic floor muscles were recruited in like different stances. So that was really cool. A lot of PTs don't really have any edge, well, limited again education in the pelvic floor in PT school, and for understandable reasons it's a very kind of intimate area, so some people are very not that that's not an area a lot of people want to go to. But when I got out of PT school, I didn't do either of those for a while. I started with neurologic patients and I kind of started in that realm. And I didn't actually find my way to pelvic health until I basically, so I have two kids. I didn't mention that. So one will be 7 and one will be 4. But when I got pregnant with my son, I started having some pain. So just some like low back pelvic girdle pain. And because of what I'd done kind of in PT school, I knew that pelvic PT was an option. And so I went for some sessions and it completely blew my mind, all of the things that I didn't know and how I could kind of learn some things to help me in that time for my pregnancy, for preparing for birth and all those things. And it was really quite amazing. So after he was born, I kind of shifted direction in my career a little bit and I started training for pelvic floor assessment and pelvic health treatment. And so you have to do some specialized classes in that. I changed to a job where I could do an in-house mentorship and learned, I mean, basically a crash course in how to evaluate and treat, women, men, like all genders with pelvic floor concerns. And so that's what I did pretty much full time for several years until COVID, which, feel like everyone's got that COVID story where their, journey just gets completely derailed. But even after my first pregnancy, so I still, even after the fusion that I still have a relatively large size curve. I still have a lot of like asymmetry in my back. A lot of my kind of core wounds with scoliosis don't have anything to do with pain, but just have a lot of like body image stuff. People say things, that aren't necessarily great. So that was most of my thing. So never really had a lot of pain, but I did have more pain with my daughter's pregnancy a couple years later. So COVID times, I had pain with pregnancy again. And then I noticed that the pain kind of lasted after she was born. And I had seen, like I'd been doing some pelvic PT and it just wasn't really getting it. So I found a scoliosis specific PT who was able to evaluate me and teach me some, like they're called scoliosis specific exercises, and it's based on your specific curve. And once again, my mind was completely blown as to, wow, this is an area that I didn't even realize existed. So the owner of the clinic, now my colleague, she said, oh, really? Are you looking to make a change? Because I need help. And so she sponsored my training and trained me to get certified in the scoliosis methods for evaluating and treating people with scoliosis, kyphosis, which is that rounding of the back, and then like spinal fusion. So now in my current practice, I still get to do pelvic health, but now I practice primarily with people with scoliosis, spinal fusion, and also pelvic health. So some people that I see, I have some people that come strictly for pelvic health stuff, but I have a lot of people that will come for scoliosis that also may have some pelvic health stuff. So it's kind of a marriage of both of those two things. And I've kind of learned that that's so interconnected. Whenever you have asymmetries in your body, it impacts the pelvic floor. I know we're probably going to talk a little bit more about that in a bit, but so it was really all of my own experiences and my own journey that really led me here. So I kind of became the PT that I needed earlier in my life.
That, thank you for sharing all of that. And it's so interesting because, obviously this is a mental health podcast. The vast majority of my guests are mental health professionals. And I say this every episode where I hear somebody's story that we usually all go into mental health because of some personal experience. I don't know if that's the same in the physical therapy field. I know definitely for you. And it was also interesting when you were talking about pelvic health, like you had the project in graduate school, but really it was, once you were pregnant with your son, and not the same thing, but the parallel I kept thinking of is so many women in mental health go into maternal mental health once they have children. And so, like, that was the parallel. Like, once you go through it, you're like, oh, this is a thing that can help me.
100%.
So, since this is a mental health podcast, I'm just going to lead with a mental health question. And you kind of already touched on this a little bit with your own experience. You mentioned body image, you mentioned just like comments from people. So, in what ways do you see the diagnosis of scoliosis as well as pelvic floor dysfunction, and this might be similar or different, impacting the mental health of your clients or you, if you feel
Yes.
comfortable
Oh.
sharing?
Absolutely. I will share all of it. I'll try to kind of keep them a little bit separate. I think sometimes it's a lot of similar messaging. I feel like specifically for people with scoliosis, we as and I can say we because I'm part of the group, right? I think a lot of us, we kind of suffer from not always body dysmorphia, but my body image issues, certainly. And we may have grown up with hurtful messaging about, oh, she has terrible posture, or he never stands up straight, or, like, oh, why does your back look like that? Or, your hip, like, stand different. Your hip isn't, your hip isn't right. And I think one of the things that is really hard for people to understand, even somebody like with scoliosis, or I hear a lot of too of like families coming in with their kids saying, oh, well, he can't hold himself upright. He has terrible posture. And so part of what I have to do is I have to educate that literally this person cannot stand up straight. Like I'm using air quotes. There is actually this. It's a disconnect between the brain's understanding of where the body is positioned and its true position. So there's this fancy PT word called proprioception, which is like the body knowing where it is in space. You might be familiar with that. So that's actually a really big thing for a lot of people with scoliosis. And it's so when we get that comment, you hear it all the time too. So I've heard it from like hairdressers. I've heard it from like photographers, like, oh, well, fix your head. Your head isn't straight. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to fix
Oh my
it.
gosh.
And so a lot of times too, it's almost like, I don't want to say micro traumas or like micro, but it's like every time we get little comments like that, it can be a little bit triggering. And so a lot of people may be really hyper aware of those asymmetries. I've had, not necessarily myself, but I've had patients that have opted out of life activities or big events, or they've altered their clothes or their appearance to kind of hide the asymmetries. So, like, oh, I only wear dark clothes, I only wear baggy clothes. Or, you know, women will say, I keep my hair really long to cover my uneven shoulders. And so it's a lot of times, even if they don't experience pain, they can have a lot of those kind of core wounds surrounding how they feel in their body, how their body looks, and just helpful and unhelpful comments or perceptions that they've absorbed from the people around them. And so a lot of times people can go their whole lives without having much physical pain because of their scoliosis, but they have absorbed a lot of just harmful messaging, just unhelpful. And that kind of really impacts your whole life, you know, how you show up in the world.
Absolutely. I mean, like self-consciousness, I know you mentioned that word. You meant like mentioned like I can't remember if you said like hypervigilant, but you're hyper aware of these comments. So you might be more anxious, on edge. You mentioned, skipping out on, certain life events. So isolation, depression, like all of these things are coming to mind. And people probably don't realize how harmful their comments are. Like I'm thinking like the photographer, like keep your head straight. And you're like, so for somebody else that may be like aware and tilting their head, you're like, oh, okay, what? Oh, sorry, didn't mean to do that. But exactly like you just said with the proprioception, right? Did I say that correctly?
Yes, that's correct.
I
Good
was like,
job.
after it came out of my mouth, I was like, I don't know that. Like,
No, correct.
you don't know how to fix it. So then you're aware, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. So then you're probably more anxious or like self-conscious, et cetera.
And I think just similar, I know that we all have our own stuff that we carry around. I think for a lot of us that have had just you hear that comment over and over again, and it gets to be like just an exposed nerve. You know, you hear something over and over again. It's just like it feels like a naggy thing. So that's, I think, the biggest thing for scoliosis and kyphosis is that, like, the body image piece and just self-worth or feelings about themselves because of that. And I think it's pelvic health, it's kind of similar. I think in general, pelvic health conditions can feel really isolating for people. I think we live in a culture where there's a lot of shame and kind of silent suffering surrounding any pelvic issue. It's kind of taboo still. It's getting a bit better, especially now with, I realize I'm in a bit of a bubble in my social media. Like, I follow tons of pelvic health therapists, but I do feel like it's become a little bit less, a little bit more mainstream, I guess, to talk about pelvic health stuff. But chronic constipation can be really limiting for people. I actually looked up there's a study from 2023 that people with like chronic constipation are like 20% more likely to have major depression than somebody without, which is, you know, really, really high. Of course, people that experience leaking, whether that's bladder leaks or like, you know, bowel leaks, they also may choose to opt out of some stuff, you know, like they may stop doing fitness, or they may stop going out to socialize and do, you know, weddings and things. They have a lot of shame and, you know, issues around that. And also pelvic pain can be really bad, especially when it comes to pain with sex, which is a really limiting factor for women, but also men. Men can have pain with sex, pain, you know, after sex, pain during sex. And that's a huge quality of life issue. So it's and there's still, even though there's more information on it, it's still not as mainstream. So sometimes they'll go to their medical provider and tell them they're having these issues. And maybe they'll hear about something like a pelvic therapist, or maybe they'll just hear, you know, get laxatives or just do a million Kegels and that's going to fix it. Or like, here's your incontinence pads, and this is what you're going to wear for the rest of your life. So I think from the pelvic patient's perspective, like those, it's really just participating in life, and the issues that they're having, they don't necessarily feel free to discuss them or to get the help that they need because they feel so stigmatized around them.
Yeah, I have so many thoughts as you were talking about that. Those themes of like quality of life, missing out on events. Like I'm thinking that you mentioned the bladder leakage, and I know like some people will wear like quote unquote adult diapers. I don't know if that's what they're actually called, like Depends and things like
Yeah.
that. But that can be embarrassing as well. And yeah, oh, I don't want to go to this exercise class that I really enjoy doing it because if I jump up and down, I have more leakage. And then that isolation piece that you talked about with just being stigmatized or embarrassed to talk about it. Cause like, yeah, I don't, I mean, like I know some, you know, cis women who give birth will like openly talk about like after you give birth, you know, it's not the same, but they're usually kind of like joking about it. But like,
Yeah.
I don't know, depending on your circle of friends, how close you are, how close you are with your doctor, how comfortable you are bringing things up, it probably makes you feel like you're the only one going through it.
Absolutely. I do there are many things that are not great about social media, but one of the things that I do feel like is helpful is there are at least now more support group options where you can find other people. Of course, you probably have a similar experience. There's a lot of reasons I don't love support groups because I feel like it can be a very slippery slope. But I do think that that's something that's been helpful is to at least hear, you know, you can find groups where, oh, you know, I also have these issues. But also, before we even move on, I want to point out maybe you know this already, but it can be common to leak after having a kid, but it's not necessarily normal, and you can get help for that. So, talking to you, listener, keep that
Yeah. No, I love that you brought that up because I actually
in
remember this was before I had my daughter. I can't actually remember, but like one of my like friends from elementary school also just had a baby, and she's a social worker, but she posted something about that. It was like it might be common, but it's not like actually normal. And I was like, what? I remember being like, because like that's literally like the only time I had like really heard people, and it's always kind of in like a joking
Yeah.
manner. And I was like, wait, okay, because like I didn't know that, so thank you for bringing
Yeah.
that up.
Well, I think maybe it's a generational thing too, but I've had, you know, a lot I just because of the way our pelvis is, I tend to have more female pelvic patients than male pelvic patients, but I will literally have women that like have heard from their mothers and grandmothers, oh, well, you're just going to have issues after you have kids, and the more kids you have, the worse it gets. And like that's what they're coming in with, and I'm like, that's not how it has to be. But anyway, I digress.
No, I appreciate that point because
Yeah.
hopefully somebody that did not know that now knows and can look up a pelvic health
Yes.
PT in their area. So you mentioned body image issues. So I just wanted to give you a little more time to talk about that if there was anything else you wanted to expand on, because, you know, I know you mentioned just like scoliosis, like kind of the self-consciousness aspect. I don't know if pelvic floor dysfunction impacts body image at all, but as somebody that works with eating disorders, body image is like a thing I like talking about. So I would love you to touch on anything more about how these issues can impact body image.
Oh, well, for sure. I could talk all day, so I will try to limit myself. some days, like I try to keep a pretty robust referral list of good psychologists and mental health counselors in my area because sometimes I feel like a little bit of a mental health therapist myself with some of these people that come in and they have had just a terrible time of trying to figure out how to find a positive body image. So there is a ton of research out there on scoliosis and low self-image. There's a higher incidence of anxiety and body dysmorphia. Like I mentioned, some people are just really hyper aware of those asymmetries. There's also some people that be, and I will count myself in this camp. There are some people that sort of just block out that they have any asymmetries at all and just kind of like they have less body awareness because they almost feel like traumatized by it. A lot of times maybe, I mean, nobody has an easy time in like middle school and high school. It's just a terrible time
No.
of life.
Yeah, middle school is awful. Like, and I feel like it just
Yes.
gets worse. As somebody that works with middle and high schoolers, I'm like, I am so thankful I was in middle school, like when I was.
Right. I mean, yes, 100%.
Before social media.
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. But even so, whether it was in that context, or whether it, I mean, this happens to adults. This happened to me in PT school. So maybe people felt othered or, you know, ashamed or just helpless. Like a big part of one of the things that's terrible about scoliosis is it's kind of like a wait and see protocol for most places. It's like once you get diagnosed, you get, depending on where you are in your growth, you go to an orthopedist and you get an x-ray every 3 to 6 months, depending on how old you are. And then they just kind of wait and see. Like that's the primary. Sometimes they'll prescribe a brace. Some doctors that, you know, the ones that are really kind of up on their research, they'll recommend scoliosis physical therapy, but that's still limited because it's still a newer kind of subspecialty. So there aren't as many people. There are some people here in the Southeast, but not as many as there need to be. But there are some comments that you can get throughout your life. So even when I was in physical therapy school, just as an example, I volunteered myself for a posture lab. So when they started, you know, when we look at how to assess somebody, and you know, that part itself wasn't too bad. Everybody had their clinical voice going on. But then we took there was a small group of us that took the shuttle back to our cars, and one of my classmates said, "You know, your back is really messed up." Yeah.
Like thank you. Like I wasn't aware.
Yes. Yeah, like
what?
I mean,
Like
and it for me, I something about, and I think again, everybody has their experiences of these types of things, but every time I get a comment like that, it's like I'm completely transported back to my middle school body and I
yeah.
just feel icky. And it's like I spent my mental health journey is I've spent my whole life trying to figure out how to keep myself at a place where those types of things don't bother me.
Yeah.
But so a lot of people with, you know, scoliosis, spinal fusion, or even, you know, depending on the pelvic health situation we got going on, like they may be carrying a lot of that emotional load. And I mean, just doesn't take very much, you know, when you're at that threshold where you're already kind of feeling so uncomfortable in your own body, it doesn't really take much to tip you over the edge. Even someone, even an unintended comment or something that maybe was meant to be positive, like it can just, it takes you all the way up to, you know, DEFCON 5, where you just feel really terrible and maybe you snap or say something, or maybe you retreat and you just have to get away from the situation because you were already at the red zone before you even
Yeah.
heard that. So it's wild.
Yeah. Well, and that's like going off that last part, you know, it the comment itself, like, yes, that's like, why was that necessary for your classmate to say?
It
But
was not.
like, exactly, it wasn't. But to your point, it like brings you back to middle school you. And it sounds like, I mean, you didn't share a ton, and I'm not asking you to, but like, it sounds like that was a time that maybe you were struggling even more with body image. So if a comment like that, you're in PT school, brings you back there. I mean, just trauma and, you know, I hear that a lot from clients, like not in the same capacity, but like with body image, especially working with eating disorders, like I don't want to be back in the body that I was bullied in or that I was abused in or things like that. And I'm kind of get sensing the same thing, like, you know, a comment like that transports you back to a body that you work so hard to try to accept, or I don't know what word you would use.
I mean, for sure. I think one of the things I try to do now, I have the privilege now that I get to do a lot of educating to fitness professionals and other PTs. And I think one of the main things that I try to do is just educate and empower the people, you know, our fitness professionals, our movement professionals, the healthcare providers to watch how they use their language to, you know, try not to assign judgment or emotion to anatomy, just to be more conscious of how they talk to someone, and just being mindful of the language that they use, and maybe find words other than like hump. Like, I know it's called a rib hump. You can call it something else. I personally prefer curve. Like,
Curve,
I
yeah.
have a curve here. Or some people think like prominence, so something that sticks out. There's one, I think it's a Canadian company that does scoliosis exercise. They call them hills and valleys. Like, your curve is a hill, and like the side that caves in is more of a valley. And it's different. It's kind of less icky feeling ways to talk about someone's body, that you can still give them information but not assign a feeling or, a morality to it.
Yeah. I love that you just brought up language because, language is powerful. And the way that
Oh, yes.
we talk to ourselves, the way other people talk to us, like I always tell people when talking about like communication, there, especially between like two people, there's like what was intended to be said, what was actually said, and how I interpreted it. And so like, somebody might really like hills and valleys or like curve. Curve is a pretty neutral term, but like hump,
Yes.
for some people they might not care. For others, they're like, ooh, like am I like the humpback of Notre Dame? Like I don't know. Like they might associate it with it. Like, yeah. And so I think the language is really powerful.
I think it really is, and it's just with everything. I mean, especially, I know that you work a lot with eating disorders, but I feel like the way that we can even model language to somebody and be able to describe things that may be hard, but in ways that are kind of neutral, or even aiming towards body neutrality or even body positivity a little bit. And like, I think that can make a huge difference for people, because even in the populations that I see, their scars may be more emotional than physical. I mean, they may have physical pain, but they're probably coming with some emotional stuff too. And why not? If we can manage both, why don't we try managing both?
Absolutely. Yeah, anything else on body image before? Because you just talked about like or you mentioned pain before, so I want to ask you about pain, but I also want to make sure that you touch on everything
No,
you
I think,
want
yeah,
to. Okay.
that's mainly it. Just as we just have power as the provider.
Yeah.
We have, or even within ourselves, even if you're someone that's listening that's not a provider, but they are experiencing some of this, like, you can change your own narrative. And I think that that's
Yeah.
one of the most powerful things that you could do.
Yeah. So kind of switching gears, but going off of, because you mentioned earlier, like you didn't experience a lot of pain, but it was more like the body image concerns or the comments from people. But obviously, I know you know better than I do, scoliosis and pelvic floor dysfunction can both come with pain. And I know that, these diagnoses will often impact like people fearing moving because of the pain. Pain itself causes so many issues. I see that in the hospital all the time. So can you talk about how like fear of movement due to pain impacts functioning, overall well-being for your patients, anything you want to talk about with pain?
Oh, again, I could talk for hours, but I'll try to keep myself. This is one of my favorite topics, but I think that pain and fear both do similar things to our kind of psyche and our brain, and I feel like they make our world smaller, and they make us, we tend to self-limit more, and sometimes for good reason. I feel like one of the things I try to tell people is, it doesn't matter the severity of, like, whether you have a really big scoliosis curve, or, a really big, like, whether it's a prolapse or whatever is going on pelvic health wise, that does not correlate with the pain that you experience, and whatever pain you're experiencing is valid. So you may have a really small curve and have a lot of pain, and, vice versa. I think a lot of people just, especially if you're not used to having pain, or you don't have any coping strategies with pain, it's the second you start having pain, all this kind of prime, not primeval, not the word I'm looking for, but like this primitive, I guess that's the word. This primitive, like, fear will set in of, oh no, like I'm gonna have this pain, and we can start to catastrophize about it. And especially if we know if someone's coming in the door and they may have this diagnosis and they think, oh, well, I have this thing, so I know that I'm gonna have pain, or, you know, just because I have these issues, like I know this is gonna be painful. Is it gonna be painful forever? Am I not gonna be able to do the things that I love? And it can be incredibly limiting. We tend to, it makes our world smaller. We stop doing the things that we love, just like you talked about. I think one of the things that is really damaging for a lot of people too, at least in the space where I work, is sometimes well-meaning medical providers or fitness professionals will kind of propagate some myths that people can't do certain things because of their pelvic floor issue. Like if you have a prolapse, or if you have, you know, leaking, or if you have scoliosis, like you should stop doing things. You should stop lifting weights. You should not do these things. And really, the evidence is not, there's no evidence behind that's necessarily a thing. Like that's not a thing. The evidence is really that you can structurally, you can do just about anything that you want to do if you have the right training. But I think what I try to do is I empower people to, you know, if we're having pain, we need to develop some coping strategies. If there's a certain movement or activity that's causing pain, let's see if we can break it down and find if it's something you enjoy doing, how can we start to adapt it or train up to the place where it's no longer painful, or how can we make you more successful? So I think that a lot of times you have to conquer some of that fear or start to break it down before you can start to see the improvement. But it's definitely something that's worth doing, because how terrible would it be to live a life where you avoid doing all of these things that you love because you're afraid of pain or afraid to move? I feel like that's much worse. Even if you end up doing the thing and it causes you some pain, isn't that better than not doing anything? You know?
I love so many things that you said there. I love that you talked about catastrophizing because that's such like a mental health term. But I see that so much in the hospital. I have kids diagnosed with scoliosis, but like a lot of the pain stuff I do is unrelated to scoliosis or pelvic health. But I think it still applies. Like, if I move, I'm going to be in so much pain, so I'm just going to sit here. Or it's like that anticipatory anxiety about, well, the last time I moved, it was really painful. So if I lay in this certain position, I'm uncomfortable, but I don't. But to your point, like, then they're missing out on things, deconditioning if you're in the hospital.
The worst,
Well,
the
probably
worst thing.
outpatient as well. But yeah, and then we know that pain in general just impacts overall well-being. I always talk about the pain anxiety cycle with my kids in the hospital. So you're anxious about pain, and then you focus on your pain, so the increased pain perception, and then you're anxious that your pain has just increased. So then taking in movement, you're not going to move because you're like, well, now I'm in so much pain. If I move, it's going to be even worse.
And then you spiral, and then you're stuck in it, and it becomes this whole thing.
So one thing you mentioned when you were talking about that is like sometimes people will come in with a diagnosis and be like, well, I have this diagnosis, so I'm gonna have pain. And we know getting any diagnosis is life-changing, but can you specifically talk about like how a diagnosis of scoliosis or pelvic floor dysfunction can impact people, can impact life transitions, specific times of individuals' lives? I know you do some specialization in like pregnancy, postpartum, menopause. Like, I mean, I imagine you were a child when you got your diagnosis, so that was probably hard, regardless of when. But then I'm thinking of like, pregnancy, that's a life transition. So, yeah, anything you have on that?
There, especially when it comes to one of my main passion projects right now is start giving some of that context to people. I feel like there Thankfully now, there is a lot more information to be had out there for people, just pelvic health, as far as pregnancy prep, postpartum, things like that, for the general population. I will say, in my own experience, when I went to look for something for people like me with a spinal fusion and answering questions such as, can I get an epidural? Can I have a vaginal birth? What are the complications for me? What do I have to think about? There was nothing on the internet that I could find. I mean, and this was like 2016, but I mean, not too long ago, right?
But no, I mean,
2015, 2016. But I'm like a learned person. So I was searching, I was searching all the places I knew to search, and there just really wasn't a lot of information out there. And there is, when we have something like scoliosis, it does impact our pelvic floor a little bit. So when you have scoliosis, you're shifted and rotated in certain spots, and that causes things to change in the pelvis. And the pelvic floor is made up of two sides. And so now one side may be a little bit working a little bit differently than the other. So, there's some other things to think about. So for a lot of people that come to me that want to get pregnant, one of the things that I just did last year was I put together a webinar of, all right, well, here, this is what your pelvic floor does. This is because a lot of people still don't know. This is what scoliosis is. These are the things that you need to think about. To get back to your question though, if you want to get pregnant and have a family, pregnancy is a natural thing for a woman or, a person assigned female at birth. It's a natural thing for them to do. It is a bit of a stressor on the body, and the body has to make some adaptations for pregnancy. So, I like to say pregnancy acts like a magnifier of all of our postural asymmetry or in our movement strategy. So when someone has like a scoliosis and maybe they have different compensating ways to kind of move their bodies or, hold themselves up in space, those all get magnified with pregnancy. And so sometimes what that means is some muscles may be overworking. It could lead to like a little bit more pain during pregnancy. The research on that is, I mean, it's a little bit mixed. There is some research that says there's a slightly higher incidence of low back pain with scoliosis. But like even just with pregnancy, even without a scoliosis, like the core muscles stretch considerably, like double their length, those abdominal muscles during a pregnancy. And there's a lot more pressure on that pelvic floor. The diaphragm, which is part of our core muscles, it can't really move as well. There's more, stress within, like more stress on the spine. We have to hold ourselves differently, and all of that can lead to just changes in how we hold ourselves and can lead to potentially pain and dysfunction for women that don't really know how to manage that. So pregnancy can be a stress on anybody. It's a normal stress, but it's a stress. And there's also a lot of misinformation out there, like I mentioned, on, can I get pregnant with scoliosis? Is it safe? Can I sustain a pregnancy? Is my curve gonna get worse? Like there's a ton of stuff out there to kind of think about. And I think that even just having that diagnosis in the back of your brain, it introduces a little bit more anxiety or fear. And I've had plenty of women reach out to me on Instagram and say, I don't know if like I'm terrified of getting pregnant. And to me, like that's heartbreaking. But it's just it that's just one of the things that we can deal with. So
Well, I tell people all the time, pregnancy, and this is me not like other than as someone who has been pregnant, like it's so rough on your body. And
it
so like
certainly
I
can
would
be.
only imagine scoliosis, or if you already had a pre-existing pelvic floor condition, how, yeah, that would definitely cause anxiety or potentially more discomfort or pain than one already feels when pregnant.
Well, and then postpartum, I think too, like your body changes again drastically, like overnight. Like you're gigantically pregnant, and then you have this baby, and
You deflate.
your core is still stretched. You probably, I mean, you may have had either, I don't know if trauma is the right word, but like things have changed within your vaginal area, or if you had a C-section, you've got abdominal trauma. The organs were rearranged a little bit, like so your body has been through this thing. And in this Western culture, it's like bounce back culture, right? Which
Oh,
is so
yes.
toxic and pervasive. Like, get back to your body within 6 weeks, which is like not a thing. It's just, it shouldn't be a
Yeah.
thing. It's not a thing. But again, like having something pre-existing and plus all of that shame and all of the expectation of, well, I saw, you know, Jenny Lou Who on Instagram, and she was back to like washboard abs within 12 weeks. And like it's just an unrealistic expectation for anyone.
Yeah. Well, and then I'm just thinking back to our conversation about body image issues, particularly in individuals with scoliosis. So if they already have body image issues being self-conscious, then your postpartum, that's just going to amplify everything. Yeah.
So, I mean, pregnancy and postpartum, that is my current biggest focus on just what I try to educate people on. But there's also big changes around like menopause time for women. So all of us, as we age, we will have changes in on like our sex hormones. So testosterone for, you know, men and women both have testosterone, but for men, you know, they'll have more drop off of testosterone as they get older. But for women, we have like this significant, like steep drop off of like estrogen and progesterone when we have menopause. And that can change, like that can be a really big issue when it comes to bone density. So there's a one of the reasons why I'm so big on like bone health and like fitness during our younger years is because when you have, especially scoliosis, when you have bone density challenges, like you have more of a risk of your curve getting worse or things, you know, happening within your spine that you wouldn't necessarily have to worry about as much if you didn't have a curvature of your spine. And those pelvic floor muscles too, like there are changes when we lose some of that estrogen and progesterone. Those tissues at the bottom of our pelvis, they just get a little more fragile, and we have more of a risk of kind of prolapse or the organs falling into the vaginal opening. There's more of a risk of incontinence and leaking, like just different things that can happen during menopause. And so I think just again, people having information can be really helpful, but at the same time, having evidence-based information and not just fear-mongering information, because there's plenty of fear-mongering information to be had out there.
Absolutely.
So knowing how to discern what you should listen to, I feel like is really important too.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. 'Cause I mean, yeah, I think menopause, bone density, I don't work with older adults, but wouldn't have thought about like scoliosis and all of that. So I appreciate you sharing. So we've been talking a lot about women or cisgender women. We just talked pregnancy, postpartum, menopause. And honestly, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. I think a lot of people, when they think of like pelvic floor dysfunction specifically, they think of women. Like, I mean, I know I do. The only time I've known people to go to pelvic floor PT have been cis women. But men can also be diagnosed with pelvic floor dysfunction, definitely scoliosis as well. And you mentioned that early on, but can you touch on how like these diagnoses may show up or impact men differently than women, if there's more of a stigma in men? Because I know we've even been heavily focusing on women, but there may be men listening like, hey, I also have this.
No, I'm so glad that you asked. I feel like I've had people like I get into my stories a lot on Instagram, and I feel like one of the things I say all the time is like men have pelvises too. I think so there are some reasons why just anatomically, like men or people with penises tend to have a little bit lower incidence of some pelvic health issues just
Okay.
because their pelvis is built differently. They have two openings instead of three. Like their pelvis is more narrow and like more stable, like more of a stable base. Because women, you know, we have to, or people born with a vulva, like they have the anatomy that they could bear a child if they, you know, decided to, wanted to. But men can also suffer with leaking. They can suffer with sexual dysfunction. They can have pain. They can have constipation. And I feel like there's a lot, just as much as there's a stigma around women, I feel like for men it's even worse because there is that perception of, oh, well, pelvic PT is only for women and even like and only for people who have just had kids. And so I think it is, I also in general, I mean, in my experience, men tend to be a little bit less, they tend to be a little bit more reluctant to seek help in the beginning, like in the first place. You know, they tend to be a little less willing to go to a doctor. And especially when it's in the area, there's so much hypermasculinity around like your pelvis and how your penis is working and what's going on down there. And I think that it's just that same, if something is not going well, I think there's a lot of, you know, feelings around that too. Like, oh, what's wrong with me? Another barrier I feel like for men too is there aren't as many pelvic PTs who will see men or are trained to see men. I think for a lot of people, it's if it's a woman and they're practicing in their own clinic, like sometimes it's a safety concern. But I think once a man does find that he has a pelvic floor concern, it might be harder for him to find a practitioner too. So that's like another, it's another thing that breaks my heart, which is why I'm always in my stories being like, men have pelvises too. Come help the men. But again, I think it's just there's a stigma around men in general not wanting to get help, but when it's something that's really personal, it feels even heavier, and they may talk to someone about it or they may not. I mean, you probably know even better than I do that boys and men or people socialize as male, they tend to not talk about their problems or their feelings or their issues as much as someone socialized female. And
Yeah, I know we were specifically just talking about like pelvic floor health, but even with scoliosis, like I'm thinking of patients I've seen, and I'm working with children and teens. The girls, females that I have worked with often will bring up like, oh, I have scoliosis. The boys, I have to read in their chart that they have scoliosis. So even like something like that, like it's just, whether it's they don't think it's as important to talk about, or like I'm thinking from a pain standpoint, you mentioned kind of like, the masculinity and just kind of, oh, let me deal with this on my own. We see men very socialized not to like talk about their pain, kind of tough it out and things like that. So I'm sure there's a lot of reasons. And then, yeah, pelvic health, obviously, if it's seen more as a female issue, I'm putting that in quotes, nobody can see me, but female issue. And then, yeah, you have these issues, but you don't really want to talk about it with anyone. And then you like look it up and you're seeing pelvic floor and it's like pelvic floor health for women. You're
Know,
probably not
all
going to want to talk
pictures of
about it.
women only.
You're
It's a
not going to want to,
big problem. I think too, one of the issues that I have, at least in the state of Georgia, which is where I practice, at least they do school screenings. I know not every state does. But I feel like one of the things that has propagated this kind of myth that boys and men don't get scoliosis is I feel like when they screen too early because boys don't hit their growth spurt until later. So when they're screening in middle school, well, some of these boys haven't hit their growth spurt. So maybe they do have a scoliosis, but that it's not really, they can't really see it yet, you know? But I
That's a really
think
good
there's a
point.
lot of, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying that's a really good point. If you're screening too early, you're going to miss something because it's not there yet.
But I think men can have body dysmorphia the same as we do. I mean, they have body dysmorphia in different ways. But we all have these kind of patriarchal ideas of what a boy or a man should look like, and what a girl or a woman should look like. And if we don't fit this tiny mold, I mean, it can be extremely harmful, and it can feel really, really heavy to carry.
Absolutely. So, Laura, as we're getting close to the end, wrapping up, I've loved this discussion. First of all, I have learned so much from you. And I know there's like so much more we could probably touch on, but I wanted to, as we're ending, this won't be the last question I ask you, but towards the end on something like more positive, I guess. Like, how do you work with your clients or patients on resilience? Like, you know, overcoming these things, working through these things, and what words of advice or encouragement do you have to anyone who's listening that may be struggling with their diagnosis of scoliosis or pelvic floor dysfunction?
Yeah, I am such a big fan of just making the world bigger, just introducing some possibility. There is always a way to adapt a movement, adapt an exercise. I feel like the patient or the person, they should always be in the driver's seat. And I literally, one of the things that I do from the first time I see someone, every time I see them, I ask them what they want to do in the session. And if there is a certain thing that they feel limited in and they want to work on that, then we will use our time to try to get them closer to that goal. Mm-hmm. I think my biggest thing, and maybe just part of my story as someone that has a scoliosis and a spinal fusion, I've never wanted to feel limited
mm-hmm.
with anything that I do because of my scoliosis or my spinal fusion. And I feel like it's really, there's so many things that we can do. They're like, the list of things that we actually can't do is so, so small, but I feel like we have to get out of our heads a little bit and literally just make the world bigger, like train for life. And what does success look like to you? What does a good life look like to you? And mm-hmm. how can I help you in that journey? And I feel like as a PT, I do that, but also I do that with, you know, people that I don't know on Instagram, or I'm always, you know, I'll post pictures of my really curvy back, and I'll, you know, show people what I'm doing. Like, yes, I'm lifting these heavy weights, and you can do it too, and you should do it. And I think it's really just important for people to know that they're not alone, and there are other people that are doing this and they're doing well. You know, I love to share success stories. I love for people to see people that look like them that are experiencing, you know, kind of accomplishing their goals and doing these awesome things in life. I try to, there's a lot of support online. There's some great, there's Higgy Bears, which is, it's this website that does a lot of like virtual support groups for people with scoliosis. So they have, you know, for kids, they have different age kids groups. They have like a Scoli Boys. So, or I think it's called Scoli Bruh.
That's
but,
so
like,
funny.
Boys with scoliosis, they have like Zooms for them.
Yeah.
And there's a lot more support available online, just knowing how to find, you know, the people that can help them. I think there's a lot to be said for like blogs and, you know, curated content on social media, like not the doom and gloom, like the old Facebook support groups that I have a hard time with those.
Yeah.
But knowing who to follow, I mean, I write a blog on scoliosis and pelvic health, and people are welcome to find me there. I have directories for pelvic health and scoliosis. I think it's just knowing if they're having an issue, knowing they're not alone, knowing how to get the support that they need, and knowing how to take the next step if they would like to.
Yeah, I love that. And it sounds like from everything you're saying, you know, there are good resources and information out there. You just need to know where to look.
Yes. Avoid Dr. Google, but I'm sure you tell people that too.
Oh, I do. I tell people that as I Google things about my own health. Like, I'm like, don't look that up after session.
Right.
Why is my, yeah.
Yes, sure.
Yeah. Well, Laura, as we're wrapping up, is there anything I haven't asked you about that you really want to touch on, expand on? I'm sure there's so much more we could talk about, but anything you really want to highlight? before we
No, I think
finish?
I'm always so grateful whenever I get the chance to talk to somebody and be on someone's platform. I'm always so grateful to be able to shine a little light on this topic, because I think that it's more common than people know and more common than people talk about. And I appreciate the chance to get to chat with you. And I hope that someone listening maybe got something that was helpful to them, and that maybe they're leaving this conversation feeling a little more empowered than they came in.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And so leading into my last question that I ask all my guests is, where can people connect with you? So if people are like, actually, like, yeah, now that I listened to this, maybe I do have some pelvic floor issues, or my child was just diagnosed with scoliosis. So
Yes.
where can people find you, connect with you, read your blog, all of those things?
Yes. I put out a ton of free curated content on my Instagram page, which is at laura.g.dpt. I have a website, which is just my name, and that's www.drlauraglazebrook.com. I have a newsletter that I link blogs and resources to people, so people can join that and learn all of the stuff that's coming out from there. I'm also hosting a masterclass in April, a virtual masterclass on pregnancy prep for people with scoliosis and spinal fusion, with time built in to help them create their personalized birth prep plan.
Awesome.
So yeah, probably connecting with me in either of those places is the best way to get in touch with me. And I would love to chat. I always love if people send me a message or a DM. Like, it makes me smile every time.
That's awesome. And I'll put links in the show notes of this episode so that people can directly connect with you. But Laura, thank you so much for coming on. Like I said, you're the first PT. I hope, like, you actually are, now that I'm thinking about that, because I'm like, I hope, like, in season one, I didn't have a PT and they're listening and they're like very offended. But I think I'm pretty sure you're the first PT. And, you know, this is why I love having guests learning about things I'm not familiar with. And, you know, even though I'm a mental health professional and you're a physical therapist, like, as we talked about, all of these things are so intertwined. And, you know, I always say you can't have physical health without mental health, can't have mental health without physical health. So I just appreciate you sharing all your knowledge and insights with me and the listeners. And I am sure that people have taken new information away and learned something and feel more empowered in their journey.
Thank you so much for having me. I had fun.
Yes, so did I. And thank you, the listeners, for joining for today's episode of Psych Talk. And I will catch you in the next episode. Bye.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Psych Talk. I hope you found so much value. If you loved what you heard or gained some knowledge, I would love for you to take a screenshot, put it on your Instagram stories, and tag me at Jessica Lee, PhD. Additionally, I would be honored if you leave a review and 5-star rating so I can continue to help this podcast grow. If you are not already, follow me on Instagram and join my Facebook community, Grow Through What You Go Through. Thank you for joining me today, and I cannot wait for you to join me during the next episode. Remember, you are loved, you are worthy, and you are braver than you know.